And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Call Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he, back to Virginia now, after a full week of travel all over the country, all the way from Colorado to, from Mississippi to Colorado and back to Orlando, Florida. The nicest weather was there, by the way. I can't give the governor credit for that, but I'll tell you what. Boy, that spring Florida sunshine, oh, it was nice. It was nice. And by the way, that's where I ended up. I preached there yesterday morning at Liberty Church in Orlando, and I want to thank the pastor, Pastor Paul Blair, and the many good friends and supporters there. The man who kind of facilitated the process, Art Alley, a friend of mine, he is a committed Christian and businessman who is very, very big on Christians learning to not invest in places where people are doing things against our Christian principles. In fact, even where they're doing things that are intended to undermine Christianity and to harm Christians and churches. And so he's got something called the Timothy Plan, which is a great organization. You ought to check it out. But I want to thank them for the invitation. The hospitality was just wonderful, and I was received so very, very well. Second time I preached there. The last time was several years ago, though, and some people actually remembered me. I was really, really floored, frankly, that they remembered me from several years ago. I had a great time down there. I spent some time out in Colorado with Andrew Womack and Bill Federer and David Barton and Tim Barton, doing some biblical worldview work and recording out there that you all will find out more about as time goes on when that material is ready to be released. And of course, got to spend time with my family, the American Family Radio family down in Tupelo, Mississippi, doing some biblical worldview work there too, that you'll hear more about as time goes on. So it was a great week, a busy week. I don't know whether I've told you all this or not. I did share this with the church group. But, you know, I fly a particular airline quite a bit, and as a result, I have access to its lounge. They have taken it upon themselves to go far beyond anything I would have ever imagined. And I don't know who's making these decisions, but you know, in the lounge, actually, you have snacks. They're not serving. They used to actually serve food, real cooked food, but they've stopped that since COVID hit. And so now you just get light snacks, and you might get a little soup or something like that, and you know, maybe a donut or a bagel or a bun or some crackers to go with the soup, but it's very, very light stuff, not much. And maybe you might get a small package salad, but so no heavy food. But, you know, you sit there in the lounge, you relax, particularly if you've got a long wait to your next plane. They actually have people walking around telling you to put your mask on between bites of your food and sips of your drink. I'm serious, folks. I am not exaggerating. And they come on over the loudspeaker and say, "You are required to cover your face with your mask between bites of food and between sips of your drink." And then they have people walking around, coming up to you. I guess because nobody's approached me yet. Thank God I haven't had that experience of being approached and told between bites, between sips. Because I would say, well, would you mind staying here and just instructing me? In fact, I may even need your help, because when I'm eating soup and I'm holding the soup cup in one hand and I'm spoon in the other, and I'm supposed to put my mask on between sips or bites, I might need you to either hold the soup or maybe hold the spoon and put it in my mouth, or lift my mask up over my face. You know, we'll get into a rhythm of this. I'll you know, I'll take a slurp and you'll lift the mask, and then I'll sit down with the mask and you'll put the pull. Yeah, we can get into a little coordination here and you can help me out. Well, of course, that's absurd. I wouldn't have anybody doing that for me. I wouldn't even think. But it's almost that absurd. It's almost that bad. And with all these people being vaccinated now, you know, I looked at the data, folks. I looked at the data while I was traveling because I just wanted to see, okay, where are we right now? And look, 500,000 people in our country, and that's not the exact number, obviously, but in that vicinity, I think it's a little bit over 500,000, have passed away, and those deaths are attributed to COVID. Now, let's just assume that all of those deaths really are COVID deaths, okay? Just for the sake of discussion, let's assume that. Folks, that is 1/6 of 1% of the population of the United States. 1/6 of 1% of the population of the United States, assuming that you can attribute all of those deaths to COVID, assuming that. And I think there's a big question whether that's true. In fact, we know that if you reduce that number only to the people who have died only of COVID, not died because they had other comorbidities, not died because they were in a motorcycle accident and it was found out in the autopsy that they had COVID, and not died because they had a heart attack, it was found out in the autopsy they had COVID, because that's a lot of the game that's been played here to inflate these numbers. But if you eliminate that, I'm told it leaves only, well, in fact, I've read it, I shared it with you all, only 6% of the people who have passed away solely as a result of COVID, meaning that COVID created breathing problems, lung problems, that the disease itself was actually responsible for taking their lives, not they lost their lives while they had COVID, either because it complicated another problem that they had or because they just happened to be sick anyway, and they died while they had COVID. But here again, let's just take the numbers at face value. It's 1/6 of 1%. And then less than 3 million people have actually contracted the disease. Folks, that's not quite 1% of the population of our country. And when you look at it in those terms, you have to ask, and the complete shutdown of the economy virtually, and the fear and hysteria that's been stirred up in people, that has people walking around demanding that you put your mask on between sips of drink and bites of food. So, but that's where we are. I'll tell you what. By the way, I happened to meet the governor while I was in Florida, and I commended him for the good job that he's done there. And I said, you know, it was so nice to come to a state where you don't have everybody breathing down your throat, watching you to see. You know, I would try to walk into a store, and then I'd remember, because I'm just not accustomed to the mask wearing thing, folks. Even after a year, I still don't like it and still don't do it very well. And I got to go back to the car. I left the mask in the car. And to have the door open and say, well, you don't need a mask. Come on in. Oh, wow. I don't know when I've ever heard that, or certainly since COVID, that I ever heard that. You don't need a mask. Come on in. So it was nice. Of course, there are localities that are run by liberals, and they're much more draconian in their approach to this. But I think Governor DeSantis has proved that you don't need all of that in order to keep people safe, in order to navigate our way through this pandemic. So kudos to them. Had a great time traveling back to my home state of Virginia, the la-la land of our governor here. I think I better leave it at that. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
Last year, Amazon began removing books that gatekeepers felt took the wrong side of the ongoing LGBTQ debate. Some of them weren't the sort of books most small bookstores would deem to have on their shelves because of their mean-spirited tone. Then came Abigail Schreier's book, Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze, Seducing Our Daughters. When I interviewed her on the book 3 months ago, we talked about some of the negative controversy that resulted in Target pulling the book off the shelves, but you could still buy the book on Amazon. That is no longer the case with Dr. Ryan Anderson's book, When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. Amazon pulled the book, even though the book was released 3 years ago. Why now? Some speculate it was an inconvenient reminder of the dangers posed if Congress passed the Equality Act. If you read the book, you will find an accurate presentation of scientific, medical, and legal debates about transgenderism. Anderson currently serves as the president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. It would be hard to describe him as a bomb-throwing radical, though he obviously has a viewpoint that comports with a biblical view of marriage and family. Critics of Amazon usually focus on its size and market share. There's another problem, its opacity. We still do not know who decided to ban the book or why the Amazon gatekeepers even felt the need to ban the book. Removing books from Amazon has larger implications. First, it also removes them from Amazon subsidiaries like Kindle, Audible, and A-Books. Second, it sends a signal to other bookstores not to carry the book. Here's the issue. Censorship makes it easier to maintain that there is only one side to an argument when one of the sides is no longer given a forum. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
Go deeper on topics like you hear on Viewpoints by visiting pointofview.net. Pointofview.net.
The following are real-life stories from Trinity Debt Management.
My story begins with debt, a lot of debt.
I used my credit cards as a source of income.
It was not a good situation.
I couldn't pay my bills.
The interest on the cards was really high.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
I initially was scared to call, and immediately I felt relief.
They contacted all of our creditors, and they put us on a plan for success.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
I've been able to pay off close to $15,000.
We're doing a lot better.
Please pick up the phone and see how affordable and easy it is to pay off your debt.
It's a godsend.
We're debt-free for keeps.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Brian Fisher here. COVID deaths are much lower in Africa and Asia, and the New York Times is mystified. I'll have the answer for you today. There is hope. The people are making their voices heard in California and New York. What Biden does not want reporters to know about the border and Greyhound bus lines may be a key part of the solution. All that and more next on Focal Point.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
We're back. Now, there are a lot of stories in the news and a lot of stuff that we could get to, and I hope we will get to all of it, or at least most of it. But there's a story that's not making that much news that I think is extremely important and that I would urge all of you to pay attention to. Yesterday, President Biden signed an executive order that supposedly improves the voting process or makes it easier for people to vote. And I read a couple of stories about it, and I thought, interesting. What is he really up to? Because the stories didn't really go into much detail, you know. An executive order, you know, with the requiring the agencies of government cooperate in helping to make it easier for people to register to vote and so forth. So I decided, you know what, let me see if I can find the executive order. And I did. It's on the White House website. I read it. And folks, I'm telling you, that executive order is nothing short of an attempt to turn the federal government and all of its employees into a political machine for President Biden and the Democrat Party. I mean, it, to me, it's just that explicit. Because what he's in effect doing is He's making every single agency of the federal government responsible for making sure that the people who work there, but more importantly, anyone who interacts with them is registered to vote and is given information and education. And by the way, as you might suspect, there's a big focus on making sure that, quote unquote, he uses this language in the executive order, people of color are helped and aided. As if, unlike other Americans, they would never figure it out on their own. Without the federal government to step in and hold their hand and walk them through the process, they would never figure out how to vote. They never meet the prerequisites, meaning that ID, presumably. Of course, he wants to eliminate the prerequisites anyway. That's part of what this is all about. And look at this. He actually wants each agency to consider ways of in which the agency can promote voter registration and voter participation, including vote-by-mail ballot applications in the course of activities or services that directly engage with the public. In other words, he wants every agency of the federal government handing out vote-by-mail ballot applications. This stuff is unprecedented. He wants to turn the federal government into a political machine. I mean, that's why we had civil service reform, to keep anyone, of course, unfortunately, it's turned against us because these bureaucrats burrow their way into the federal government with a view toward advancing an agenda rather than serving the American people. And it's probably just as bad as it's ever been, and maybe worse, because once they're in there, because of civil service protection, you can't get them out. Well, it's very, very difficult. Look at this. Soliciting and facilitating approved nonpartisan third-party organizations and state officials to provide voter registration services on agency premises. Now, folks, may I translate that for you? Stacey Abrams will have her $100 million machine all throughout the federal government doing her thing of indoctrinating and registering people to vote. You know, this stuff should be against the law. I don't know that there's a particular statute that would prevent it, but since the Hatch Act prohibits federal employees from engaging in, and I don't know the exact language of the statute, but they certainly can't engage in overt political activities and be seen as being outspoken or out front in any kind of political campaign or anything like that. It just seems to me this completely violates the spirit of that. Because Stacey Abrams operates through political action committees, which of course are arguably nonpartisan, but also through nonprofit organizations, which she would definitely say are nonpartisan. Well, they're Democrat. They're part of the Democrat machine. They're funded by George Soros and Tom Steyer and Michael Bloomberg and Steve Phillips and others. Definitely partisan. That's the new executive order. And by the way, while Beijing Biden, President Joe, is pushing for H.R. 1, which would take a lot of this stuff and codify it into law, and frankly, even worse stuff than this, because it would codify into law, which I believe is unconstitutional, because the Constitution leaves the voting process in the hands of the states, and the federal government can't step in and take over and say, no, you're going to do it this way from now on. So I have no doubt this would be challenged in court. And if a conservative court stays true to itself, this whole apparatus that they're trying to construct with H.R. 1 would fall, or at least very much of it would fall. Whether that happens, whether it gets there, whether the court remains true to itself, of course, are questions to be answered. We'll see. But he's not waiting for that legislation. Somebody got to him and said, look, you don't wait for the legislation. You can, by executive order, turn the federal government into your own voting machine apparatus, your own political machine. And that's exactly, this is not being talked about. It's not being, people aren't really paying any attention to it, but that's exactly what he's doing. And I have no doubt that Stacey Abrams is all in the middle of this, since this thing is racially tinged throughout about, you know, making sure that people of color who've been denied the right. Yeah, please. You know, and when I hear stuff like that, I have a tendency to stop and examine my own life and say, well, is there any truth to that at all? Is there a scintilla of truth to that, at least that I could bear witness to? I believe that I voted in the first election I voted in, which I think was local Massachusetts elections back in 1976, if I'm not mistaken. It might have been 75. I didn't really start to pay attention to politics until after I got saved, frankly, because that was when the Lord began to deal with me about what America means to him. And so my attitude about the country and about politics and all of that began to change, first of all, just getting interested, and then, of course, learning the differences in philosophies and platforms and all of that, which led me to abandon the Democrat Party and become a Republican in the early 80s. I don't remember a single solitary instance, not even a hint. And I've voted in Massachusetts. I voted in, well, actually, I guess I just have to say the only places I voted in were Massachusetts. I don't think I voted when I lived in Pennsylvania. And I didn't vote when I was stationed out in California. I'm almost certain I didn't vote out there. I was young. I was not thinking about governance or politics at all. But I voted in every single election in whatever jurisdiction I was in since 1975 or 76. And I can't think of a single instance in which even a hint any effort to prevent me from registering, from voting, ever came into play. I mean, I never even thought about it. I never came home, and my wife and I would often vote separately because we had two different work schedules, but I never came home, nor did she, and say, you know what, today somebody really tried to stop me from voting, and I really think it was because I'm black. We've never even had any discussion of any such thing because it's never happened. And yet here's Joe Biden telling the world with this executive order that, you know, people of color can't vote. They're being restrained. Well, you know where he's getting that garbage from. I mean, he's getting it from all these leftists, but Stacey Abrams is putting that out. She's saying that the Republican Party is trying to restore Jim Crow laws. This is the craziness that we have to deal with. And this is why I say I'm extremely hopeful, because I just think that the American people are going to look at this stuff and say, this is nuts. These people, you can't give these people power any more than you should put a baby's hands on the nuclear trigger. To me, it's about the equivalent, because these people are operating at a juvenile, an infantile level, except unlike an infant, they're not innocent. And they have very, very bad intentions. I think, like an infant, they're too spiritually undeveloped to understand the evil consequences fully of what they're doing, because if they did, they'd know they're pushing the button of their own destruction. Back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
I heard a story the other day. It was a story about how to catch a monkey. Whether it was fact or fiction, I'm not sure. You see, I'm not a very experienced monkey catcher, but I'm sure that it had a good moral point to it. Therefore, I consider it worthy of passing on. Do you know how to catch a monkey? Well, it's a very simple matter, according to my source. Get yourself a real strong steel cage about 1 foot square. Now cut a hole in the cage just large enough for the monkey to slip his open hand through. Take that cage and a small block of sugar into the jungle. Secure the cage to the trunk of a tree. Take the small block of sugar and place it just inside the cage so that a monkey can reach in and grab it with his hand. What will happen, my source says, is that the monkey will reach into the cage and grab the block of sugar. Then, with his hand closed around the sugar, he will be unable to slide his hand back through the opening in the cage. My source said the monkey will not turn loose of the sugar, and as long as his hand is clenched around the sugar, he's trapped. You know, greed has captured many a person. But the odd twist is that hardly anyone considers himself greedy. Abe Lincoln used to tell a story about an Illinois farmer he knew who said, "I ain't greedy about land. I only want what joins mine." Well, greed can destroy our humanity as quickly as any other sin. And never forget, that's what greed is, sin. We may call it good business or future security, but simply changing the name doesn't correct the fault. One time, the meat packer Phil Armour gave each member of a certain department in his business a suit of clothes. They had the freedom to pick out their own choice and were told to send the bill to Mr. Armour. They were not limited to the amount they could spend, but were given the right by Mr. Armour to use their own judgment. Well, one young man took advantage of the situation and purchased himself a very expensive suit of clothes. When Mr. Armour received the bill, he called the young man in to make sure the bill was correct. He was told, indeed, that it was the correct price. Mr. Armour assured the young man that the bill would be paid. But before the young man returned to his job, Mr. Armour had a piece of wisdom to share with him. This is what he said. "I wish to say to you that I have packed a great many hogs in my time, but I've never dressed one before." One day, on a mountain beside the little Sea of Galilee, a Galilean carpenter gave a crowd some words of life. "Don't store up treasures here on earth where they can erode away or may be stolen. Store them in heaven where they will never lose their value and are safe from thieves." As we all know, greed cannot produce any type of treasures other than materialistic treasures. And materialistic treasures are non-existent in the life beyond this one. You know, I got to thinking about my friend's story on how to catch a monkey. I've come to a conclusion concerning it. Either there are a lot of monkeys around who look like people, or there are a lot of people around who act like monkeys.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Stacey Abrams actually said, in the efforts that we have to maintain the integrity of our voting system, she actually said, and of course she claims that there's an attempt to eliminate all protections of quote-unquote people of color, and I don't know what she means by that, because I think what she really means by that are people, are black folks in America, because that's what the Civil Rights Act was passed to protect after, of course, slavery and then Jim Crow laws. But she says, quote, and she says this in 2020, she says, "We are returning to post-Reconstruction Jim Crow era laws, and this is not hyperbole." Yeah. That's the garbage she is spewing all over the place. And it's just a lie out of the pit of hell. Look, I want to take your calls, but I wanted to get those two things out. I'll mention a couple of other things while you all are calling in. The number is 888-589-8840. This is, folks, this is all about trying to make America a one-party state with guaranteed power in the hands of these Democrats forever. She's accusing Republicans of doing the same thing, but that's just not true. That is simply not true. What I would like to do is to defeat the Marxism, the socialism, the collectivism, the communism that is now emanating from the left in the Democrat Party. I'd like to defeat that. I'd like to see that just die an ignominious death. But I'm not bothered by the two-party system. I think the best arguments will win, and the American people will, if given the ability, if allowed to hear all of the arguments, unlike what big tech is trying to do and much of the media tries to do now, decide what you can and cannot hear, decide what you can handle. Because there's certain things, you see, you just can't handle. The sophisticates, they can, but you can't. And so they have to stop you from hearing certain arguments and hearing certain information because you won't know what to do with it. It will negatively affect you. So they are protecting you. But leaving that kind of asinine attitude aside, if they allow the American people to discover, to research, to read, to listen, to analyze, to debate, to discuss for ourselves, generally speaking, the American people reach the right conclusions. And that's what they're afraid of. That's exactly what they're afraid of. So they use this hyperbole to, here again, to manipulate people. And then, of course, anybody who doesn't agree, you get denied a platform for saying it, except here, of course, on American Family Radio, because we actually believe in the First Amendment here. The number again, 888-589-8840. Here's one other thing I want to put on the table. You know, Twitter just banned this woman, Lauren Witzke, for speaking out against a guy, a transgender guy, who, in response to the argument that we don't want men walking into female restrooms, particularly with young girls going into those restrooms. Forgive me, folks, but you just got to hear this. It's not vulgar, but it's ugly. His response to that was, quote, let me see if I got this guy's. Yeah, Alec Vaid Menon, I guess, is the name. Don't ask me what that. I'm not sure. Alok Vaid Menon. That's the name he goes by. Alec Vaid or Vaid Menon. Quote: He says, "There are no princesses. Little girls are also kinky. Your kids aren't as straight and narrow as you think." Yeah, that's his response. Now, he posted that on Twitter. And this woman, just a decent American woman, active in responding to these things, God bless her heart, she responds by simply saying, you know, you can't say things like that. Let me see if I can find the quote. And they put her off. And he said some other ugly things. I'm not going to read it all. That was bad enough. But he said some other ugly things as well. And in response to that, oh, you know what? I don't have her quote right here in front of me, but I'll get it. She, like you or I would do, I mean, she basically says, that's wrong. You can't, you know, you basically points out this is what we've been talking about. This is what we've been talking about, which is what? Moving in the direction of pedophilia. And of course, they will deny that to the hilt, but what does that mean? Oh, yeah, this is it. Lauren Witzke is the former Delaware U.S. Senate candidate and America First GOP leader in Delaware. And she said, quote, What we can assume out of this is that Twitter is enabling pedophilia, promoting pedophilia, but censoring biblical truth. So we can only assume Twitter is pro-pedophiles and their sympathizers. Well, needless to say, Twitter didn't like that. Now let me see if that's the thing that she posted. Here we go. She said, the narrative is that transgender people will come into bathrooms and abuse little girls. The supposed purity of the victims has remained stagnant. Oh, no, that's him. That's him. Then he says, there are no princesses, little girls, blah, 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 blah. And what did she say? What was her exact response? I thought I had that in front of me. I know this is a response to Twitter, but anyway, whatever she said, they cut her off for it. They cut her off for it. Among the things that she said, and I'm not sure which was considered to be the horrible thing, but she said, for example, they called us crazy 10 years ago and we spoke of the slippery slope. And now we can't even speak out against the LGBT agenda. The whole end goal was pedophilia, and that's where we are today. And we are losing because Republicans are silent. And she says, LGBT is a gateway drug to pedophilia. Whoa. Okay. Well, if you can come on and say things like what this guy said, why can't she respond the way she responded? Well, we know why. Because the left has no godly values whatsoever. Let's try to get one call in here before I have to go. Let's go to Wesley in Georgia. Wesley, welcome. Oops. Wesley, there you are. You're on.
Hey, Bishop. I just want to say I appreciate your hopeful attitude about America and the American people. You know, in 1777, we lost a key battle. Washington lost a key battle, and several troops were killed, and even about, I think twice that were captured by the British, and the Continental Congress had to flee Philadelphia. And only about 20 members of Congress got back together, and they convened, I think, at York. But everybody was doom and gloom, and we've lost, and, you know, it's hopeless. Everybody speech after speech. But Samuel Adams, who was a very strong Christian, he got up there and he said, you know, we can be discouraged, but we can't be doom and gloom. We've got to remain hopeful and faithful and in the fight. And he said, God has his providence on this country. And he, you know, talked about how many times they had delivered, God had delivered the Israelites. And, you know, he said, God is Amen. On our side. And if we're all doom and gloom, then everybody else is going to be that way too. So as a pastor, I appreciate you setting a good example and you know, keeping us all hopeful. Okay. So I appreciate that, Bishop.
Well, thank you very much, Pastor Wesley. Thank you. I appreciate that. But look, let's face it. The Word of God prompts us to that, doesn't it? I mean, if you stay in the Word of God, you can't be hopeless. You simply can't. You know, God is our ever-present help in the time of trouble, our refuge. And so as long as, you know, the Bible says the name of the Lord is a strong tower, the righteous run to it and are safe. As long as we keep our eyes looking to the hills from whence comes our help, we're going to be just fine. Back in a moment.
I'm Francine Perry. I am the mother of Laura Perry, who was a prodigal for 9 years and lived as a man. When Laura came home, we were all ecstatic. And so I just woke up one night and it just kind of laid on my heart. We need to start a specific basket with names of prodigals in it that we will pray over.
Learn more or submit a prayer request at inhisimage.movie/prayer.
Because we all have someone.
American Family Studios was started back in 2011 as a way to advance the Christian worldview into an increasingly media-rich culture.
Media is like such a powerful tool to communicate the gospel. I love writing stories, getting in my office, and just thinking, how can we portray this concept of who God's character is? And to get to use the gifts that God has given me is really a joy.
AmericanFamilyStudios.net
Christians. They're suffering big time in Africa, and they need our help. Hi, this is Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, and Pastor Lumo ministers in Mozambique near the Indian Ocean. He's been beaten in jail not for what he believes, but for how he lives out his faith. You see, Lumo has been quietly and faithfully sharing the gospel with Muslims, and many have come to Christ in recent months, but extremists here, they have assaulted him, his family, and many in his church. But you know what? They're not asking for an end to the persecution they face. They're praying for Bibles to open and read every day in order to be able to endure and persevere as new followers of Christ. Hey, give thanks if your pastor hasn't been beaten in jail, but please don't turn a deaf ear to these pleas for Bibles. Instead, help support the church in Africa by sending a Bible to these waiting Christians at only $5 a Bible, or $100 sends 20. Call 800-YES-WORD, 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 or visit sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, and God bless you for caring.
I married Mr. Wrong, for sure, and he married Ms. All Wrong.
This is Focus on the Family Minute with Amber Leah.
I used to think, well, I believe in God's sovereignty, but boy, this was a mistake. I mean, I really felt that way early on. We had so many triggers that I wondered, how is this going to happen? How are we going to navigate this for the rest of our lives? And it wasn't until God started working on me personally, after I nagged and argued and yelled for a really long time and that didn't work, the Lord eventually started to say, Amber, you are Ms. All Wrong and he's Mr. Wrong, but that's because nobody is perfect. There is no perfect person except for Jesus Christ. And so that's what I had to come to. It's like, you know what? We made a vow. God did bring us together. He is wrong, I'm wrong, but that's because we're two people that are sinful. We need to yield to being perfected in Christ day by day. And that's what's going to make us right for each other.
More from Amber at FamilyMinute.org.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
The number is 888-589-8840. You know why I couldn't find it, folks? Because her response to his tweet was one word. It was only one word. I didn't read you the entire tweet because it's just ugly. And you know, talking about children that way, I've shared more than I perhaps even wanted to, and maybe more than I should have. But her response was one word: demonic. That was her only response: demonic. She then got a tweet from Twitter saying the following: Hello, Lauren Witzke. Your account has been suspended for violating Twitter rules, specifically for violating our rules against hateful conduct. You may not promote violence against, threaten, or harass other people on the basis of race, ethnicity, national origin, sexual orientation, gender, gender identity, religious affiliation, age, disability, or serious disease. Well, I don't see that she did any of that. She just said that his words were demonic. Why aren't his words threatening to children? But, folks, that's where we are. And, you know, just back to just one quick point about Stacey Abrams, and I'm going to come right to the phones. You know, the fact that she could say something like that about Republicans are trying to take us back to the Jim Crow era, and that's not hyperbole. It just goes to show what contempt she has for our country and for the American people. Because, see, the American people wouldn't tolerate any such thing against anybody. We wouldn't tolerate it. They're too stupid to know. We wouldn't even tolerate it against them. We wouldn't want them to be denied their right to vote. We just want fair and free elections that are conducted honestly. But we wouldn't even deny them their right to vote. But this is the way they have such contempt for America and such contempt for the American people that they are always quick to blame America first and to think the worst of us. A la Michelle Obama, for the first time in my life, in my adult life, I am proud of my country because the American people elected her husband. And like I said, we're not perfect. We don't always get it right. Well, that was a big mistake, but nevertheless. Up until that point, she had never seen a reason to be proud of her country. Think about that. Think about the contempt in which these people hold our country. It's just, it's staggering. That's why they've got to be defeated, because how can you possibly build, benefit, bless, that which you hate. You can't. It's going to take those of us who love our country to bless it and to build it and to create a future for the posterity coming behind us. Okay, let's come back to your calls. Let's go to Mike in Missouri. Mike, welcome.
Semper Fi, brother.
Semper Fi.
Hey, I got three words that would help solve some of these problems with this Twitter nonsense and all this stuff. Class action lawsuit. You know, if people will grow some backbone and start suing these people, and I'm not talking about, I'm talking about billion-dollar settlements, asking for them. Get in their pocket good. I would sue them on three different counts. Discrimination would be the first lawsuit. Second lawsuit would be violation of First Amendment rights of free speech. And the third lawsuit, which would be a separate lawsuit, would be discrimination, First Amendment, and censorship would be the third one. And I would file separate lawsuits, and I would ask for as much money as I could, because that's all. And I don't believe in suing people, but for these nutty left-wing liberals, I would make an exception, you know, because they've completely gone off the rails, and that's the only way you can get people like that's attention, is get deep into their pockets and hurt them financially. And I would be one of the very first ones to sign up for the lawsuit, because these nut jobs don't intimidate me in the least. And that's all I have to say,
Mike,
brother.
Listen, man, that's great. That's great, Mike. Thank you for calling. And look, I agree with you. And you know, you sound a little bit like a lawyer there, but we've just got to find some creative lawyers who will look at some of these actions and try to develop legal theories. You know, that's one of the reasons the left has beat us for so long, because they were always looking at ways that they could, frankly, twist the law to make what was unconstitutional constitutional, to make what was constitutional unconstitutional, and they have basically found ways to do it. Well, we need some creative lawyers on our side to actually right the ship of state and to make what's constitutional actually constitutional. And this idea that, well, they're private companies, I hear that a lot. Well, they're private companies, you know, the First Amendment doesn't apply. They are not private companies. They are not. They exist because of that provision in the communication statute that protects them from liability as neutral platforms. They exist at the pleasure of the United States government and the people, and that's the basis upon which they can make their money with impunity and censor with impunity. And so they are, for all practical purposes, operating under color of law. So I think you're absolutely right. Creative class action suits could make a big difference here. But thanks for the call. Let's go to Marina in Tennessee. Marina, welcome. Marina, you are on.
It's a pleasure to speak with you, Bishop Jackson. I have two comments. It seems that all of these executive orders that President Biden is doing is a form of representation or taxation without representation. Because some of what he is doing is going to cost states and individuals in those states millions or even billions of dollars. The illegal immigration thing, for one. I mean, the states and local municipalities will have to provide health care, schooling, more housing, et cetera. So that's my first comment. Mm-hmm. And then when you were talking today about the voter intimidation, it seems to me that conservatives are at risk of that, because like in Tennessee, for example, in the primary elections, you have to declare a party in order to get the proper ballot to, you know, vote for your candidates. And if you are maybe a minority in a district that is, you know, primarily Democratic or something, you might be facing some problems asking for a Republican ballot. So maybe that's something that needs to be looked into, because that could be very bad with this cancel culture thing in some areas with people's jobs and livelihoods and whatnot. And that was my thought that it came to me.
Well, Marina, listen, first of all, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for praying for us and encouraging us. And I agree with you about the taxation without representation. You know, I think these executive orders are unconstitutional. I think Joe Biden is what he's doing right now with these executive orders around voting. To me, it's unprecedented. He, like I said, he's trying to turn the entire federal government into his own political machine. Now, on the issue of intimidation of voters based on the ballots that they choose, I've lived in communities of different demographics. I'm an American of African descent, but I've lived in predominantly white communities. I've lived in predominantly black communities. You don't have to, in Virginia, you don't have to declare your party, and you don't register as a political party or under a political party. However, when you go to vote in a primary, you by definition have to declare yourself. In other words, you can't get both ballots. You can only get the Democrat or the Republican ballot. So I voted at polling places that are, you know, predominantly black, for example, and I go in and ask for a Republican ballot. I don't care. I mean, you know, it's time for us to stop being intimidated. You don't like me choosing a Republican ballot. You know, I don't know what to tell you except, you know, go stick your head in some water till you cool off or something. I really don't know what to tell you. It's none of your business. So I don't know. I just think people have got to get a backbone. In fact, I would love it if somebody said, well, you're getting a Republican ballot. Oh, my goodness. Get ready for some preaching. You know, because I'm going to rear back and cut loose. But I've never had anybody say anything to me, look at me in any kind of funny way. Now, maybe people had some thoughts, but I've never seen anything, any indication that would make me, oh, wow, see, they tried to discourage me from voting. I never experienced it. So I just think that stuff is what's thrown out there to try to convince us that somehow, you know, we are doing things to discourage people from voting. And I think if a person wants to vote in America, you can vote. But thank you for the call, Marina. God bless you. Let's go to Luke in Texas. Luke, welcome.
Hello?
Yes, Luke, you are on.
Oh, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. Hey, I know the topic has changed and you're talking about voting right now, but...
Well, that's okay. It's all on the table. Go right ahead.
It's even the same. Okay, first off, I'm gonna say I'm a truck driver, so I'm not always in church, especially my home church. But if I don't have to be on the road on a Sunday and I can find a church, I will attend. But with this, much of the moral issues, for example, the gay, transgender, lesbian, before the election, you know, even in 2016, when President Trump, he brought it up and stood on it for life and gave a very good, a wonderful speech at how a baby in the womb, you know, is a baby. But for abortion, gay, transgender, homosexual, they're not preaching on it.
Luke, you can hear we're out of time, but I think you got your point across, and you're right, not enough on. I just encourage pastors to just rear back and cut it loose. Just like I said, if somebody were to accost me at a voting booth about, well, how can you as a black man pick a Republican ballot? I say rear back and get ready for some preaching, because here it comes, and we ought to be doing the same thing from our pulpits. God bless each and every one of you. I'll be back tomorrow. Join me then. In the meantime, remember, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.